Hey everybody, welcome to another edition of the Beekeeper's Corner. This is not going to be a traditional episode, and I know it's been a while since we've been away, but I want to assure everybody that I am going to continue to record the podcast. Just had to take a hiatus for a little while based on some things in personal life. Ended up doing some of the soccer stuff that I thought I was away from, and work has been crazy with that. We're starting a new Boy Scout troop, and I've been off doing some training over the weekend, and since I've recorded the last one, I went through a bout where I was pretty sick and out of commission for a couple days, so several reasons have prevented me from sitting back behind a microphone, but I'm itching to get back to work here on the podcast, and figured, let's see if I can figure some alternate means to bring some content in. So is born the concept of the sidebar. So here I am. And the way this format's going to work, instead of a researched and full-blown episode like I normally bring, I figured I'd spend some time bringing you, the listener, some thoughts and meanderings of what's going on in my mind thinking about beekeeping. As I record this, it's November 16th, 2010, and the bees are pretty much dormant for the season. We've reached a couple days here and there where it's been 60 degrees and they've ventured out, but for the most part, days have been high of 50 degrees or lower, and the bees are staying put inside. See them come out every once in a while when I've inspected the hives on a couple passes. They may come out and check things out, maybe do some cleansing flights, but for the most part, they're tucked away and happy as can be for winter. So I'd say that I'm recording this in the evening. It's about quarter after, actually it's about 7:30. I'm driving home from work. I listened to another podcast called Bubbotanicals, where the person who records the podcast is often doing his episodes while he's driving from point A to point B. I understand that that's probably not the most logical way to record a podcast, as you want to pay attention to the road, but I'm going to do my best to maintain focus. If I zone out every once in a while, I'll try and edit out the bad parts, but I'm going to let it fly as here I roll down Route 1 in front of Quaker Bridge Mall, if you've ever seen that in the Princeton area, and just about to turn on 95 to head home from Princeton and over to my house in Hunterdon County. We'll see how this works out, and hopefully nothing tragic will become of it. I'm pretty sure that taking my time and making sure that this is going to work out. So anyway, on to topic number one. I've been listening to an audiobook that I found online. I could provide a link to it called, it's the LibriVox recordings of The Hive and the Honeybee by L.L. Langstroth. This book was recorded back in the 1800s when he was inventing the Langstroth hive that we all know and love. And it's an interesting read or listen as it's being consumed in my case. I'm really amazed at the amount of information that he knew back then. I would have thought that, I guess just my generation, most of the things that I know in my lifetime to be true were discovered through the age of the 1950s, 60s, and 70s. And here's something that occurred in the 1800s where they didn't have all the answers, but they actually had quite a few of them. I'm quite impressed by Langstroth. What struck me most, first I'd have to say, is how much science and thought went into the construction of the hive to address the problems of the day. What I really appreciate about his delivery is the fact that he completely went into each and every facet of why he designed his hive the way he did, the entrances, the materials that he used, the shapes that he used, the mobility of the frames, and he justified his design and compared and contrasted with those of the day. And what strikes me is the fact that that hive design, for the most part, has stood the test of time to something that we use here in the 21st century. So that's an amazing aspect in itself, that a century plus later, we're still using fundamentally the same design that they conceived back then. And Langstroth and the other people who had a hand in this, hats off to them for being able to do that. One of the things I'm most interested in with what Langstroth talks about is temperatures inside the hive. I've always wondered about, could we, and this is one thing that I think we as modern beekeepers could probably use our engineering knowledge and materials available to us, could we control the interior temperature of the hive better? I know we do things in the wintertime like wrap our hives in tar paper and, you know, put mouse guards on and put a stick underneath the inner cover or the outer cover to help ventilate it, whatever. I'm surprised that scientifically we haven't done more to prevent moisture buildup in the hive and get better ventilation. I'm imagining that there are people who have better ideas, but for the most part, beekeeping remains unchanged from when Langstroth invented the piece in the first place. What the book has taught me is I have this notion, and I'm going to enter into another topic at the moment. I have this notion of building a long hive. And I'll say right out, before I even get started, that the concept that I have is more like a boutique hive, but there's a monetary reason behind why I would design the hive that I have, or more better stated, a reason that I think in the long run would be better for beekeeping at the hobby level. So he talks about the way he designed the entrance and the airflow and the way that moisture moves around, and I've always wanted to design a long hive. And conceptually, we have a couple yard carts that we purchased and one that I inherited that had the big bicycle wheels. These carts are amazing to me. They're not very big, but they're very well balanced. And you could put logs or a lot of weight, rocks, stone, whatever, and basically anybody could pull these things up and down hills. They roll very easily. It's easy to balance the weight. And it just amazes me the amount of weight that you could move around. Now, I'm a pretty big guy. If you've ever seen a picture of me, I'm pretty stout and stocky, and I can throw, you know, 100-pound super filled with honey and bees and whatever around, like the best of them. But I'd imagine that most people, myself included, don't particularly like that aspect. I know when you're bent over picking up a second box on top of a lower box to take a look at the bees, it's not an easy task. And I've always thought that the one problem with the Langstroth hive being vertical in shape is the fact that you got to pick the top box off to get access to the bottom box. And when you put it down, what do you do with it? And it just seems to agitate the bees, and it also makes this aspect of you're taking the hive apart, basically, and exposing the bees to the weather when it's cool. It's just not the best answer in my mind. I always thought what would be very cool was to have telescoping lids where you slide back and you only expose the frames that you want to take out, or, you know, you only show so many bees the outside thing so they don't get mad at you and come up and swarm you. Anyway, that notion aside, a long hive would be set in a horizontal mode, almost like if you took the boxes instead of stacking Langstroth hives on top of each other long ways. Now, that contradicts a couple things. It contradicts the concept that most bees would probably live in a tree with a hole that runs in an up and down cylinder, that bees tend to build hives in nature that have like the chain rope shape to them. I know there's a term for it, but it escapes me at the moment. They festoon from a point and hang down and create loop-like comb, where in the Langstroth, they're forced to build on a long horizontal frame. In nature, I think they would build on a more vertical frame. Originally, my concept would be, let's just build a simple box that would hold Langstroth hives. And that does seem to hold a lot of merit, because then you could just use existing equipment and you're just building a box. And I've seen these on the web. I know that people have them. But I don't know. I'm just thinking that there should be a better, you know, again, a better engineering of it. And I also concern myself with the fact that, you know, there's a lot of science into the shape of the way the bee comes in and the bees move up. And I bet there's a lot to learn from, say, a top bar hive that is spread and achieves a lot of those objectives of nature, but actually is built in a horizontal mode. And I'm not naive to the fact that if a tree fell down and it was hollowed out, that bees might create a home, and they're probably not that fussy. But optimally, I'm wondering if a vertical hive is more preferable to bees than a hive that is horizontal in nature. So back to the horizontal design. There's some challenges that I question myself about. What would the roof look like? How do you get that telescoping roof that I'm talking about, where you could slide it out of the way, extract the frames, but only get to the ones that you want? Do you use a hinge system? Do you use like drawer pulls that, you know, you use to pull a kitchen drawer out, and maybe you just slide the roof back? How would you engineer that? The other piece is, could you run several hives together in one long box? And I'm assuming that if you built a long hive, and actually have some evidence from talking to someone who did build one of these long hives, that you would want a barrier in the middle and load your frames up and let them populate the frames. And once they're full, then you would just keep moving the barrier and expanding. You couldn't leave that expanse out behind them because the bees would probably do nefarious things in there. Where would you put your entrances? Traditionally, I think you would put it on the end of the long hive on the short side, but should you put it on the middle of the long board facing, or how do you say this and get the right picture? So if you had a rectangular box, you have the short ends and you have the long sides. Should it go in the middle of the long sides? How do you get a venting system in it? If you put wheels on it, like I'm talking about, you'd strap an axle down on the bottom and the wheels would ride up along the sides. Does that have any impact on the design? And okay, so I talked about a bee and boutique. Most of the time, commercial beekeepers and or hobby beekeepers who would have multiple hives would probably not want to spend a ton of money on custom hardware. But hear me out on this. If you had a hive with a handle on it and some wheels, there's some advantages to that. You could move it around your property as much as you want. You want to clean the area where the bee yard is, you roll it away. Kind of take your time, and I'm sure that the bees might get confused if you keep rolling your hives away, but I'm imagining over time that problem could be solved. Paint it a certain color, they would always know where it is. Move it in short bursts until you get it to where you want, things like that, right? Second side of this is, you want to go to a county fair? Wheel it up on the truck, get a couple planks, and away you go. Third side of this, want to harvest some honey? Smoke the bees out, do something with them, take your frames, wheel it over to the garage, do your extraction. I don't know, these all have their own intricacies as solving problems, but having the thing mobile where you grab the handle and wheel it away, somewhere along the line, I have to conceive that that comes in handy. The other aspect of a long hive that I think is great for the hobby beekeeper is young, old, not in good shape, whatever, but have an interest in it, lifting the equipment around when it's full of honey and pollen and all that stuff. It gets heavy, quite frankly. I don't know that people really appreciate that. And I touched upon this earlier. Wouldn't it be nice if the thing was up in the air where you're just kind of leaning over and in arm's reach you could pull out whatever frames you want? No lifting, no messing. You just slide the roof back and do your inspection. Okay, here's where whiz-bang comes in. What if you could figure out some way to set the frames in a telescoping thing? I was talking about how a kitchen drawer slides out on, you know, a couple rails. What if each frame some way had a way that you could just slide the rail out like a cartridge? Slide it out. You don't even have to pick it out or do whatever. And then slide it back in. I know there's engineering challenges and propolis challenges and all this other stuff, but ideally you have to think of what's the optimal solution to dealing with a hive, and then say, how do you engineer that? They figured out a Langstroth hive, they figured out top bar hives where they don't even use foundation, so why couldn't we figure out some way to do this? I think that would be cool. You roll the side down a little bit, you grab the end of it, you slide it out like a cartridge, you look at both sides, when you're done, you slide it back in. If you want to pop it off, you pop it out, put a new frame in, do whatever, and away you go. And it's all right there at, you know, chest level versus having to bend over and get on a platform and figure that out. So anyway, conceptually, I won't bore you with any more details, but it's kind of what I'm thinking, and I'm contemplating, you know, over the winter time, thinking about different ideas, and I'll probably meander on this task over time as I engineer this in my head and look at other people's designs on the web over the next year or so. And then somewhere along the line, I'm going to do what my father-in-law recommended and go out in the garage, start chopping things up, building it, and seeing what it looks like. I know he was a putterer. He always went out and built things. He built this interesting contraption to heat the pool one time. He took a 55-gallon drum, and he put metal pipes all the way around it and hooked it up to a hose. And he would light the drum and let it heat and heat the water, and then he would just circulate with a small pump the water around the pool. He built his own heater. And originally, he started with thermal piece that got heated by the sun. He built this big box with a plywood thing, but it didn't work because we live in the woods and he didn't get enough sun on it. So he changed it to where he was going to do a wood fire. We live in the woods, plenty of wood. That was the option. He was always tinkering with these things, and his recommendation to me was, go build that long hive and then see what you don't like and just keep iterating through designs. I kind of want cut to the chase and come out of the box with a pretty sound design. And I don't know if I'm smart enough to figure that out, but time will tell. So back to the Langstroth book. I'm about halfway through it. There's some 25 or 27 chapters. I've listened to about 12 or 15 of them. I'm absolutely fascinated, like I said, about what he knew. And over the rest of the winter, as I drive to work and I'm bored, every once in a while I'll file that up and maybe I'll bring you some more insight from it. One thing that I thought was really interesting, he talked about building some sort of berm system that helped to ventilate his hives, and I wonder if that's the piece that we're all missing. He was building berms that had a channel underneath the hives, by the way I read it and understood his description, that created sort of an airflow that helped ventilate the hives from the bottom. We don't do that, most of us, nobody that I know of. Some people put their hives on platforms, but most of us put it on a cinder block or set it on a, you know, pallet platform or something like that. So maybe that's the why our bees get so hot in the hives and come out and do bearding, and maybe that's why we have moisture problems and so on in the hives. So anyway, guess that's about as much as I can recall on that topic. We'll move on. So a couple episodes I've talked about bears and the bear aspect of trying to protect my hives. I continually hear reports, one as recently as day before yesterday, about bears in our area. So I haven't, again, I'm tempting fate here, haven't made any moves. But I was speaking with Sharon the other day. When we were closing the pool up, I guess it was actually a long time ago, but about a month ago, and we're going to move our garden. Our garden, where it's located right now, is underneath a stand of trees, and it's in an optimal spot in our yard for our convenience and making the best use, but it just doesn't get enough sun to grow the vegetables. We spoke about moving it over to the section where we put the beehives. And we're probably going to clear a plot of land over there and run some water over so that we can water the garden, and then put the beehives outside and put it all inside an electrical fence. So have that on the to-do list for solving the bear problem, getting the beehives together in one spot. Again, inside the protection and getting a garden area that actually gets some sun, because everything that we grow, certain things grow in the shade, but as you can tell, probably Jersey tomatoes need the sunshine, and it's just not working in the spot that we have. My mother-in-law built this garden originally. It's got raised beds and it's got a nice area around it and everything, but it's just not functioning. Originally, they had a little wire run around to keep the critters out, and they had a fence built. We had a tree come down in a storm, fell across, and smashed all the fencing and smashed a lot of things, and we'd have to do quite a bit of repair to get the thing back to its original state. So since we're in that mode, we might as well move the garden, and we have a plan. So we'll keep you posted on that project, I'm sure, as things progress for spring beekeeping. Last topic, I guess, to discuss in this sidebar is that I saw the information come out about a potential link to CCD between, I think it's IID or IIV, is the iridium something. I don't have any notes, so forgive me for not getting it right, but there was IIV and Nosema serrana. There were some questions in the press about the merit of the person who reported it and their motives, but for the most part, this person made the discovery and was the lead scientist on that. He's been in Bee Culture magazine. He's well known in it, and I think he emulates or echoes what a lot of people have said to begin with. What's killing the bees? It may be a combination of things. It might be that the pesticides and other things are limiting the bees' ability to deal with the Nosema and the IIV in the hive. And it's causal and it's link, and like pneumonia. If you get pneumonia, it ain't the pneumonia or whatever. I'm tired and rambling, I can tell, but basically, it'd say that if something weakens you, then it opens you up to something else to impact you, and that may very well be the case. And I'm sure that people will take the information from the published data provided. I think it was POV, which was the acronym. It's a publicly posted scientific journal that anybody could post to with the right credentials and information. And maybe this is a link to continue to further us to the information for CCD. We watched a video in a recent beekeepers meeting. And I'll have to put a link on the show. I don't remember what the name is again. It's been a long day, and I was telling people at work that I'm really brain dead today and I can't fire the synapses to bring anything together. It was The Vanishing of the Bees. Yes, that's what it was. And they tend to advocate that it has a lot to do with the pesticides being applied. And we've seen that evidence based on conversations in our beekeepers meeting here in New Jersey, where at least people tend to believe that speculation, that these pesticides are really to cause for CCD or to blame. And I guess, you know, again, I want to keep an open mind, but it stands to reason from the timing. The most convincing piece in that film, and if you get an opportunity to watch The Vanishing of the Bees, to me was the France minister talking about, they took one normal, organically grown sunflower and exposed the bees to it and watched the pattern. Bees went up and down in a specific motion across the face of it and harvested the pollen and product that they wanted out of the sunflower, and then flew away and perfectly fine to the next one. On the one that was treated with pesticide, after a short period of time, the bee became disoriented. It followed no pattern like the organic one. And they said eventually the bee started to work really hard on cleaning itself. Cleaning, which I'm going to morphosize and say that it was trying to get the pesticide off or whatever, but cleaning itself, and eventually became so disoriented it just fell off and died. And if that's not evidence, that pesticides are impacting the bees. And it was probably one of the main things, according to the film, or at least what I took away from the film, that drove them to ban the specific pesticides from the Bayer agency in France. And then later they came back, and Paramount suggested that since that ban had occurred, it has had a direct impact on the improvement of the bee numbers. The other major thing that you'll find in that film, which was, I think, just a blow to the chest of every beekeeper sitting in the room, was that the one experience they showed of almost like a Holocaust, where a person lost, I'm going to get the number wrong because I'm guessing, but 50,000 hives or something like that, and they just showed the massive amounts of equipment laying and waiting with no bees. I have to ask if anybody's seen that. What happened to the bees? Wouldn't you think that the bees have a specific territory? Whatever it is, I seem to recall it's like 6 to 8 miles, but I've also heard that they'll travel up to 18 or 15 miles from a hive. But could you not, if you lost 50,000 hives and the number of bees that they mentioned, I think it was like 2 billion, walk or inspect that circle of evidence and find the carcasses of the bees and figure out what happened to them? That's the question I was left with in a Kevin kind of logic. That was what we discussed driving home from the beekeepers meeting. So anyway, if you have any thoughts on that, I'd be interested in hearing that. And speaking of that, I guess it's a good time to share with you information on how to reach me. The beekeeper's website for this podcast is www.bkcorner.org, and you could send me an email with your thoughts at bkcorner.org. It's kevin@bkcorner.org, and I know what the next episode's going to be. I found some research on how temperatures change inside the hive. I thought it was fascinating. Let me dispel a myth, or at least what I think is a myth, right? Originally, I thought 93 degrees, bees always maintain the temperature. And I even thought, naively, as a novice, that they maintain that temperature during the winter time. But based on some recent things that I've read, I know that, or believe that, not to be true anymore. That the bees will maintain the temperature to keep themselves alive, but it won't necessarily be 90 degrees. So now I want to know the information. There were studies I found where they put infrared technologies on hives and thermometers and whatever to measure the interior temperatures of hives. I think the study was done in Connecticut or someplace like that, which is a similar climate to mine. So now I'm going to go do the research on that, and I'll bring you back what I learned. I had a couple other topics on tap for the information. I know one that I wanted to figure out was how do bees hear. I have no idea how that works for the bees, and if I've mentioned that before, I can't recall, but I do want to figure out how that works and understand. I know how they see, I know how they touch with their antenna and their bodies and everything, but hearing is something that I'm interested in. So anyway, I guess that's enough for this sidebar. It's almost probably like a real issue, but without any facts and winging it driving home, but I'm turning on to my road, just about to go in the driveway, and that's the signal to call it a day. Thanks for listening to the Beekeeper's Corner. We'll catch you next time, and take care, everybody. Bye-bye.